Welcome back to the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. I am your host, Sam Williams. I realized I never say my name, so I thought I'd try something different today. And it's me and Dylan hanging out in the studio today. We're going to talk Blacktail 101, but before we get there, we're just going to kind of update on what's new, what's going on. I got here a little bit late, went to the gym this morning. I've turned into a big workout guy. Do you notice the difference, Dylan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In your demeanor, your attitude, I would say it's changed. It's not so sad.
I do feel on days that I work out, I have a little better energy. Then the hard part about that is then you want to go all the time. And I'm trying to find that balance, just like with everything in life.
That's good, though, because you've been doing an office job for
20 years.
So I haven't been, a lot of physical activity hasn't been there.
No, you're sitting in front of a desk all day, every day. And sometimes I don't even get up. The one thing that I've noticed, and I do have a sit-stand desk now, so sometimes I spend half the day standing, half the day sitting, which is good.
Yeah.
But going to the gym, everything works a little bit better, you know, like my systems.
I haven't been able to do anything since this knee incident. And I just notice, I just feel stiff and sore.
Well, and this guy's rocking a full knee brace every day, right? Yep. For how long?
I got another 5 weeks. I think it was 12 total.
And he's trying to avoid the whole surgery if he can heal up on his own.
It's getting better. Dislocation.
I think that's a good approach to life in general, if you can avoid surgery. Yeah. I think it's, if you got to do it, you got to do it. But I think if you can let your body heal on its own, you're much better off.
Yeah.
In my experience.
Yeah, for sure. True. But I also do, since we talked about it a little bit before we started, I do want to make the point to kind of how we started talking to each other.
Yeah.
I know for a fact, I didn't even know what you looked like until I was 18, 19. And we're family, okay? My dad wasn't big on family reunions. I don't think I maybe went to one as a kid. So my dad used to always explain Sam to me, and he always explained him as my grandpa, just slower and a little bit wider in the skin tone.
Yeah. I mean, probably fair.
Yeah, it's close.
I mean, your grandpa Billy, my uncle Billy, he was a spry young man in his back in the day.
Yeah.
But I could probably beat him in a race today.
Oh, for sure, dude. I don't know. He's pretty quick, though. Yeah. He used to race me all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then he had this one slip and fall. He was barefoot in his grass. And you know how it drops that big hill at the end? He was running, and his toes, like, he went to go stop, and the grass was all wet, and the grass slid underneath his big toenail. And just there, it was probably a half inch off of his toe, just stuffed with dirt and grass. It was so disgusting, man. I'd help him rip it off that night.
Yeah, and, we saw each other hunting season most of the time. Your dad came on here and talked about that. That's when we'd see each other. He did come out to Uncle Charlie's when we used to have that Christmas Eve thing every once in a while. So I'd see him at that. But you're right, he wasn't big on the summer family reunion deal.
No. Well, yeah, I maybe only went to Uncle Charlie's maybe once. So it might have been something he did before I was born.
I'm talking when we were kids, when his parents brought him, you know?
Yeah.
And I would say you were always like this secret. So in hunting camp, it was always like, yep, couldn't get his grades up, so he's not here this year. He'd always have a reason why you weren't there.
It's such a bold statement, man.
Yeah. But I think it was just you were focused on sports, really.
Yeah.
Now that we've talked about it, it wasn't really a grade issue.
Well, it was a sports reason. And then, like, I didn't want to miss any football games growing up because, I don't know, I wanted to play. So I didn't want to miss my practices and have to sit out. The dumbest thing in the world to me. So that's the main reason why I never came. But I also know, I think the first time that we actually hung out was hunting. When I came on your first, or that.
Was that the cougar year?
Yeah, the cougar year.
Mm-hmm.
You almost killed me that year. Then talked to you every day ever since, basically. Yeah.
It's been good. It's been fun to have a connection with you. And, you know, your buddies are fun to hang out with too. And just keeps me kind of in the perspective of some people that are younger than me, which is also nice.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah,
so,
it's fun.
I was going to talk about something else too, and I forgot. Oh, you and I are the party planning committee for your dad's 50th birthday party. So how's that been going for you?
Well, I would say from the start, every time I've asked my dad a question, okay, and this is going back to the moment where we were trying to plan something. We decided originally he wants to stay at the Ochoco Ranger Station cabin.
Yeah.
That's where we ended up getting it booked. But the weekend he wanted to go, it was booked up. So we looked weekends kind of surrounding it. And the only weekend available is Easter, and that doesn't work for anybody in our party going. So then we started, and every time I go, okay, is there any other idea you want? And he goes, I don't know. It's my birthday. You guys figure it out. And that's his response to literally everything now. Like, hey, man, everybody's got to pay this amount. And he goes, well, I don't. It's my birthday.
Yeah. You know? Well, what's funny about it, I mean, you would look at the two of us. We're not the party planning type. And we've got some criticism over some previous trips on our meal planning strategies and the quantity of food that we brought and the quantity of items that we brought. So,
well, the bachelor party,
yeah,
this last year, we took some heat,
and so that's why it's odd that we somehow got in charge of this thing. But we somehow have 9 people going to this birthday party where we were worried about the snow level for a bit there, but I think that fear is kind of alleviated.
Yeah,
I think the roads will be clear
on it.
Yeah, and we're gonna do a little fishing, just to hanging out. Might have a few cold ones.
I know for a fact we're already going to have too much food.
Yeah.
Because he's already complaining about the food choices.
Well, we're going to cook some venison. We're going to cook some lamb. Mm-hmm. We're going to cook all kinds of different stuff. We have kind of a loose menu planned, but we're going to finalize that puppy today. It's going to be fun. It'll be getting everybody together and just having fun. There's no self-service, I don't think, at that cabin. So that's kind of a plus in my opinion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it'll be different staying at a cabin. Like that. Well, I don't think I've ever done anything like that.
We'll probably do a ton of shed hunting.
Yeah.
We usually always
do.
Yeah. We're always big on that.
Yeah. John bought a predator call for this trip.
Oh, wow.
Like, and he's like, we're going to go on these big walks and do these sits and all this stuff. I said, John, we've tried this before, dude. We make it 20 minutes and we're done.
If we could get a cougar out of it, that would be pretty sweet.
I had a dream we saw one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been having some weird dreams lately.
I know. I told my parents about my baby sister. Mm-hmm. They were like,
Yeah, I had a dream that Dylan's folks had a baby sister for him, and then I was driving him to a swimming pool with his daughter. For some reason, I had to drive way out in the middle of nowhere. But those little girls love that pool. Your dad just threw that little baby right in. She just started paddling away. It's like those videos you see on TV of the people throwing the baby in the pool, you know? I hate
those videos, by the way.
They freak me out a little bit.
Oh, my God.
I could never just drop my baby in a pool, but I think naturally they just start swimming.
Yeah, I think it's probably the survival in them going, okay.
Well, I mean, they live in water for 9 months.
Yeah.
So.
It still freaks me out. I will never do it. No one will ever talk me into doing that.
Yeah, it's
even when we did swimming lessons for Blake, they told you if you want at the end, you can dunk your baby. No.
Yeah.
She doesn't know it's coming. These other parents are doing it. All their babies are choking, and it just freaks me out. I don't like it.
The other thing going on in my life, we just had our second set of lamb twins at the old Williams Family Farms.
Heck yeah.
So we had twins 2 weeks ago. Well, it's 3 weeks this Sunday. And we were at a volleyball tournament, and my son was home alone, and he was waiting on an Amazon package, so otherwise he wouldn't have noticed. So he went to go get his package, and he sees a lamb out there, and he calls. He's blown up both of our phones. Jen gets the call. Hey, Mary had her baby, and I don't know what to do. I don't even know if it's alive. I don't know what to do. So she calls our neighbor and my sister-in-law, and they kind of come over and help him and get the mama and the baby into the barn, and by the time we got home, there was a second one. So
That's awesome.
Yeah, those two are 3 weeks old. And then we had our other sheep mama, Clover. She had 2 little babies. And so she is all white. And last year she had a white baby. And our ram is all black. And then her mom, who's Mary, just had these twins, all white as well, and she's also white. Well, for whatever reason this year, she had this little girl that's solid black with these white spots all around her head.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Then she had a little boy that's all brown. But she's struggling right now. She's like getting her energy. Mm-hmm. Like you go in to check on her in the barn and she just looks like a zombie. And these two babies are just chowing down all the time. So it's a lot on her.
And some of this lamb is that we're going to be able to eat on this trip came from...
Those were Mary's twins from last year, yeah.
Yeah.
And what's weird about harvesting your own meat out of your own, that you've raised and, you know, helped survive from eagles and coyotes and all that is you think you're not going to want to butcher them because they're so stinking cute when they're little. I mean, they're just, and they're running around and they're crazy and they're just fun to watch. But by the time they get to like the 6 month mark, you're like, yep, it's time. Yeah. You know, it's weird. It's a, how that, I thought it would be harder than it was.
Yeah.
And then after I ate them, I was like, those are pretty tasty. And actually a lot of people like lamb meat. So we sold a couple of them last year and they sold in a day. So I'm going to raise my prices a little bit this year, but
you should. I feel like it's costing you probably more.
Oh yeah. 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 You don't, it's not real lucrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's a new law in Oregon too, that passed that before you can get your vaccines, you have to actually take the lambs to the vet. So I had to take these two babies to the vet for a wellness check before I could get my vaccines, but then they give you vaccines for the rest of your flock. But that's a new law that started in January 2024.
That's crazy.
So that way you get to pay an extra $57 for a vet check.
Yeah,
you
know? That's a good call. It sounds fun.
I bet the farmers that are true farmers, not like me, are probably pumped about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's dive into Blacktail 101. This is an episode we've talked about doing for a while. You know, we've danced around it with talking about the synopsis and various things, but Dylan kind of cut his teeth hunting and blacktail hunting and has had some pretty good success in it. And so the goal of this episode is like, okay, if you've listened to our show and you just don't know where to start and you're like, okay, I want to hunt, but I don't even know what to do. I don't know, you know, what gun to buy. I don't know where to start going to hunt. I know nothing about it. I can go buy a general season Western Oregon tag, but what do I do from there? You know?
Yeah.
And so,
well, I'd say probably to start it, you know, well, obviously out of the gate, let, you know, get a synopsis. They're free. Mm-hmm. You can even look it up online. Go kind of just, I'd run through, you know, some of those, the rules through there, just kind of check out everything blacktail related that you're, you know, trying to, you, everyone has those questions to begin with, and they have pretty much all your answers in that book. But then once you start getting into that mindset of, okay, this is the year I'm going to do it. You know, I wouldn't try to just rush it. You know, some people are different, but you know, take a year and just kind of get yourself prepared gear wise, everything. So like over here, you're looking at inclement weather all the time. Rainy, it's wet, you're walking through tall grass, blackberry bushes. So you need the proper gear in order to do that. And for me, I've had a hard time finding boots that are going to last to that and keep my feet dry. I finally found a pair that I've tested them out a little bit throughout the winter, and I think that they're going to last me pretty well. I can't remember the name of them, but boots are your number one to me.
Like, I agree, yeah.
Comfortable boots that are going to last you and stay waterproof. And there's a lot that you can do with that as well, you know, those waterproof sprays or whatever, the oils or whatever.
Yeah, because having wet feet is miserable when you're out there. And you're going to have wet feet if you don't have good boots.
Yeah.
In Western Oregon.
Yeah.
And I would say that, you know, a lot of people get into hunting because they maybe inherited a gun. And so let's say, you know, their grandfather or a relative passed on a gun to them and they're like, oh man, I want to go do something with this gun. And that's great. But that gun may not be the right caliber for you as a beginning hunter, like depending on your age and what you want to shoot.
Right.
And so like in my mind, you know, you can do hunter safety and go out, and usually they bring, there's a live field day where they bring several different caliber guns that you can shoot and get a feel for what's comfortable. Study the ballistics a little bit for the areas that you're going to be hunting. Typically Western Oregon, you're not doing a lot of long shooting, but you could be. I mean,
yeah.
It's possible. I mean, I know you guys have taken some long shots and
yeah.
we grew up with a family that would always hunt canyons, and they would just sit there and glass all day with like a spotting scope, and they were taking long shots. So it's finding a versatile rifle that's comfortable for you to shoot, that you're not worried about recoil. I think that's an important step.
Yeah. And it all depends on you as a person. 'Cause you know, I've seen my dad hunt with that 300 Weatherby, and he hunts both sides of the state with it, hunts elk, deer, doesn't matter. But that's a gun that just became an extension of his arm over time, that when he pulls it up, you know what's going to happen. And he can put when you know he's aiming downrange at an animal, he's going to hit that spot. There's no guessing. It's every single time. So that importance of finding that gun that's comfortable for you is not only important for you, but it's important for that animal.
Yeah.
Because, you got to think of it that way. Like, okay, I'm taking this animal's life. I need to do it quickly and as painless as possible. So spending as much time as you can behind a rifle and developing that comfort with your gun is a huge importance.
And I think if you're going to get into this sport of hunting with your children, getting them started early, like starting with BB guns and pellet guns, and then once they've got some basic gun safety under their belt, then you upgrade to a 22 and just kind of getting them up rather than, we had Kyle on here a while back and he talked about his first gun he shot was like a 12 gauge with a slug.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think that's the right way to break a kid into hunting, you know?
Yeah, you definitely got to ease them in. And just the gun safety alone, you know, like you want to put them behind something where over time as they progress and get a heavier gun or a higher caliber, more dangerous weapon, that they know exactly what they're doing with that gun when they're put out in the field, where to shoot, where not to shoot, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I would say, okay, so next steps. So you've got some gear, probably some rain gear and some good waterproof boots. You've picked out your gun. You've put some time at the range where you're comfortable and you've got that thing sighted in. The one other thing I would say around the gun topic, and we can move on, is invest in the best optics you can afford, because the rifle is one thing and getting a good gun. Most gun manufacturers build a good product. You know, you're not going to buy a bad gun these days and at a gun show or anywhere. The guns are pretty solid.
Yeah.
But spend the money on some good optics that can get out there, you know, and get the magnification that you want. And don't cheap out on that part. I would say spend as much as you're comfortable spending on that.
Well, they're that expensive for a reason, in my opinion. There's a reason that they're as good as they are. You know, that's why they're giving you that quality.
And a lot of that optics stuff is lifetime warranted too. So, you know, if something happens, they'll send you another one. So it's an investment into, if hunting is something you want to get serious about and do, you can't spend too much on optics.
No. Right into binos, you know, binoculars. As soon as you want to spend that money on those things, especially around here. And it depends on what kind of hunting you want to do. I know a lot of people are successful in the timber, and that's great. It's just something that I haven't dove in personally on too much because we've had success other ways. So we sit at the top of a clear cut and we just kind of bounce around to each clear cut and we glass for hours on end until we start seeing deer. One thing that I've noticed as I've gotten older and got better optics and got better at finding animals was these deer. And my dad was always pushing me on this, because you'll be glassing this one clear cut and, you know, 20 minutes in, I'm like, all right, this is dumb. I've looked at everything. But if you go back to one of those spots and hit it a second time, all it takes is a deer to just move its head slightly or take a little bit of a step. And next thing you know, there's a deer standing there that was there the entire time, bedded down right behind some brush.
And you never saw it.
Never saw it. And it happens all the time. Or you know, we've had a couple instances where we'll leave that clear cut and we'll come like to maybe get a different vantage. Like you're on very top of a cut and there's a clear cut on your left that goes down, and then there's clear cut on your right that goes down. So say we drive up and we're glassing the one on the right now. If you peek back over to the left, next thing you know, there's 12 deer in the bottom of it. Like, it happens frequently. There's deer everywhere. It's just the matter of you being able to sit there, glass, and find them. And you need the optics in order to do that, and you need to spend the money on them.
Yeah, and I would say that a lot of times trusting your instincts is important when it comes to spotting deer. So a lot of times we are like, oh, that probably wasn't a deer, or that was a bird or whatever. I mean, movement is always the draws our eye to movement, most of us as humans. And so it's pretty easy to see a moving animal. It's training that eye to see one that's not moving. And, you know, my dad always said, look for the Mickey Mouse ears, you know, and that deer laying down, just kind of staring at you. And, you know, all of us hunters make antlers out of branches a lot. So we're looking at every little limb and every, you know, you're picturing this big buck laying down in his bed. And most of the time, that's not going to be an animal, but every once in a while it will be.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, enjoy that part of it too. I think some people look at that as like a chore, mm-hmm. but that can be fun.
Yeah.
You know,
once you start, so I'll say this too, especially if you're just starting, the blacktail hunting will be as frustrating, the most frustrating thing you'll ever do, because it's so tedious. And, you know, sometimes you're seeing 20 deer a day and sometimes you're not, and you'll go weeks without seeing a deer. But it's just you have to just stay motivated and dedicated to the task. And, over time, yeah, like I've had, 2 years in a row where I've been stumped, where I have, you know, I'm seeing 10 deer a year, and I hunt hard all year long. I hunt at least 2 full days, daylight till dark, and then every evening that I can after work.
Yeah. And there's also the frustration of it is sometimes you'll see that buck and you got like a 3-second window to make a decision.
Yeah.
And that could be the only time you see him for the rest of the season or the rest of the hunt. And it's, if you weren't on your game and got your gun up to your shoulder, then it's over,
yeah.
You know? And sometimes there isn't a shot. I mean, that's just the reality of blacktail hunting. I've had them hop in front of me on, let's say, a cat road that I'm walking, and they just dart in front of you and they're in the thick brush and you run up there and you can't see anything.
Oh, yeah. Well, even just going back to some of one of the best blacktail hunting days I've ever had was with you and Kyler. It was that bow hunting day. We saw like 7-8 bucks or whatever it was, and an absolute monster. Probably he's a record book blacktail, one of the biggest, you know. It's, you have a split second to make a decision. If you make the wrong one, it's over. You'll never see him again.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately the wrong one was made, and we never saw that buck again. We saw him twice and never again.
Yeah, and we've gone in that zone probably several times since then and never seen the quantity of deer that we saw that day.
I don't even know if I've been back into that zone and seen a buck again.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been back in there and only seen does.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, and, but, I mean, that's part of it, the fun of it, too, is everything's changing and, you know, what worked yesterday may not work today, and you're changing your tactics and you're adapting with the surroundings. But so, you know, you're the new hunter, you're saying, I don't even know where to go. So, I mean, we're not going to say specific locations for anybody, as you got to kind of figure that out on your own. But I would say in Oregon, we have a lot of private timber, and a lot of these private timber companies, they'll give you permits. Some of them will charge for the permit and some of them it's free. And, you know, you go in there and you talk to them, and if you're respectful, then they want hunters to help eliminate some of these deer that are eating their, you know, new planted trees and things like that. And so that would be a good place to start, in my opinion, if you don't know where to go. It's go to these tree farmers, talk to them, fill out their permit. They'll give you a map that shows you the gates you can hunt. Some of the gates are open for road travel and others you park at and you walk in. And I think that's a good starting point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just to dig a little deeper, like the main ones that you're talking about, you know, you have the Weyerhaeuser, that one you're going to have to pay for, wait in line for, it's online type of thing. Cascade Timber, as of now, they have some gates you can drive into, you know, a lot of them, at least around us anyways, it's walk-in only, but not requiring a permit to do that. It's just, you know, you just got to be smart about it. Like during the weekdays, there's people logging, you know, doing their job up there. So it's, you know, be on the lookout. If there's a gate open and there's a sign that says, you know, logging operation ahead and it's Wednesday, maybe avoid that zone. Let them do their job. Don't get in their way. And then Starker's another one. Starker's, and I'd say those are probably the three biggest around here. Starker's, just contact their office. I think you have to go into their office for the first time and then ask about the zones they got, pick the one you want to hunt, and then they'll give you the permits for those gates.
Yeah, and some of their zones are rifle, and some of them are shotgun only, some of them are archery only. So it's making sure you know what weapon you can use and where the boundaries are. And that's where, obviously, Onyx, for the new hunter or for anybody, it's a game changer, because you can pull up that app while you're there and you know the boundaries of the private land versus the public land, or even the neighboring property that's private. Because the worst thing you can do is see that big buck on the neighbor's property of a tree farm, pull the trigger, and then have to have an uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I would say, know where your boundaries are. Be respectful of everybody around you. You know, don't leave garbage in the woods, those types of things. And that makes hunting better for everybody. And then those tree farmers, or maybe you meet a private individual that is going to let you hunt their property, they're more likely to let you come back if you treat their place like it was your place.
Yeah. And another thing that just irks me too, that I see a lot of people dump trash, you know, right in front of these gates, or deer carcasses or whatever it could be. Just don't be that guy. Pick up your stuff and deal with it on your own. You know, like I see a lot of Cascade Timber. A lot of people are dumping their stuff right in front of their gates, or you're walking in and you're just seeing beer cans and sodas and all this stuff laid out everywhere. Just pick it up. These guys are letting us do it. They're letting us in there without having to pay to do this on their property. So just respect their land and pick up your crap.
Yeah.
I mean, simple.
Yeah. And beyond that, there is some public ground too, some BLM ground and stuff that you can go find and hunt. And,
I would say too, the Onyx route, you know, you're even, I mean, Google Maps, it's not going to give you gates and stuff or anything like that. But like with Onyx, you can get on there and, kind of figure out zones where to go. E-scouting is a big thing. Use it to your advantage. That way you know exactly where you're going to go, and you can put pins on there. You can get your directions to that spot and spend some time doing some scouting. And not like you might not go in there and see any deer, but they're there. You know, like if you're in there in the summertime, it's so hot, they're going to be bedded down somewhere. So just drive in, just kind of check out the zone, get comfortable, because there's a lot of roads and a lot of people can get turned around on them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of forums online for hunters. You know, there's a lot of different Facebook groups and just people you can talk to that will give you that's not always good advice probably, but you can at least kind of see. Some guys are really open with sharing different things, and that may be good or bad, but we have a lot to hunt in this state. And I mean, we're specifically talking about blacktail. Blacktail is kind of what the West is known for, I guess, you know, the muleys, because they're in multiple states, but like it's kind of unique to Oregon, Washington, California, Northern California. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. They might sprawl into some other states, but
I'm sure.
But I know they're up in Canada and Alaska and all that too.
And you'd be surprised too. You go on Facebook and a lot of people do talk about numbers being down, and it could be true, but like I said, there's also those days where you're seeing 25 plus deer. Like I've had days with me and John, we just go for an evening and we're seeing, you know, that's 2.5 hours after work and you're seeing 20 deer.
Yeah.
It just depends. It depends on your day. And it just for my own personal opinion, like you read some of that stuff online, don't take it serious. Because as much as they say that, it's hard to get that exact number. It's so brushy. It's hard to see. You just need that right moment to get lucky. That's all it is.
Yeah, and I think watching some YouTubes too of other hunters, you know, if you just type in Western Oregon blacktail hunting and see what pops up and watch some guys, usually you're going to see some success on those, because guys don't usually post their videos of just walking around. But you know, you get an idea of what this actually looks like in the field and what it takes to get the job done.
Yeah, and it's just a blast, man, especially if you're a competitive person. There's something different about it. Like the competition between you and a wild animal is unbelievable. Every time that I'm out there and I just get the glimpse of a deer, the heart rate goes through the roof. It doesn't matter if it's a buck or a doe, I am ready to rumble every time. And it just, like, especially if you go 2 hours glassing, you don't see anything. And then 2 hours and 1 minute come around and here comes a doe walking out. You're like, okay, here we go. And then it just gets you ready for the rest of the day.
Yeah. And for you, you know, your dad and you kind of grew up hunting this way, right? I mean, that he introduced you to this style of hunting.
Yeah.
But then you've kind of adapted different things with John and just hunting with him. And what do you think is like biggest lesson learned in that, you know, time period of hunting?
Well, I think I got a couple. I would say one, not trusting my glass and spending that time, you know, like what I was going back to with my dad of like, hey, this sucks, let's move on. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, well, how about you look at this buck bedded down right here? You know, like that's happened multiple times. And it's little things like that. Like one thing my dad always talked about was, especially around here, especially if you're out, if you're a guy that wants to get out and do some walking, like Sam was saying, you might have 3 seconds to get it done. Have your gun off your shoulder. Hold it. It sucks, but hold it. Because mm-hmm. you need that little bit of extra time sometimes to make a decision. So I've had that happen to me a few times. Or bow hunting. I know we kind of talked mainly about rifle, but bow hunting, I've walked in where I'm like, oh, I'm not going to see anything, and I don't have my arrow knocked.
Yeah.
And here comes a buck, walked right out in the middle of the road and stop. And it gives me plenty of time to make something happen. But now I have to get the arrow out, do this, and range, pull back and shoot. And right. I wasted that opportunity.
Yeah, I've learned that over the years too. Like if you're going over a new hill or a new opening or whatever, whether it's a rifle or a bow. So if your rifle, get that shell chambered, put the safety on, have the gun. I mean, obviously your hand's not on the trigger, but you're ready to go to where all you got to do is pop that safety off, get it on your shoulder and shoot if you need to go quickly. And same with the bow. It's like, get that arrow knocked, be ready, creep over that hill because you don't know.
Well, 90% of the time, those deer are going to see you way before you see them.
Or smell, yeah.
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 Like it's just going to happen. So yeah, just be prepared because I've had those incidents happen probably, I would say 30 times where I've missed an opportunity when I should have been successful, but I wasted it.
I've also had a ton of times where I put the bullet in the chamber, go over the hill and there's nothing there. And then I'm unchambering the round and putting it back and putting the safety on. Or like with the arrow, that one day with John this year, the couple times I hunted my Willamette tag, I had my arrow knocked for almost the whole area we're hunting. As soon as I unknocked the arrow, there was a little buck right there.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I don't know that I wanted to shoot that little guy, but I definitely, by the time I was trying to get in a position to shoot him, it was over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's and for them, you know, it's just the blacktail thing is so different for me anyways, just compared to hunting muleys and stuff, because we've harped on that quite a bit, I would say. But the terrain you're in, like I was saying earlier, those deer have to take 2 steps and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if they stand right there. You're never going to get them. Because they're behind the thickest wall of brush you've ever seen, and you just lost that 2 second window that you had with it standing broadside, perfect shot.
Yeah.
So you just got to be always prepared. And another big thing that I would say that that I learned my lesson from hunting, I always think, and this is just the way I was raised and how my dad always taught me. And, you know, I think it does hold some value, and I think some of it is true. When that sun beats down on these hills and stuff, these deer aren't going to be up and moving too much. But I've also been proved wrong there, because we've always hunted when the blacktail hunting's the best, in our opinion, when it's raining. The deer are out more, they're out longer. That timber for them is real wet, and it makes them soaking wet. It's almost more dry for them, it seems like, to be out in the open. Easier visibility for them, and because their smell gets messed with that rain coming down that hard.
I think it's a predator concern too, because it's noisier, and if they're in the thick brush and their different senses are getting messed with, and I think they feel more vulnerable.
Yeah.
So I think that's why we see them out in the open more too.
But I would say that I've been stumped where I have like been glassing clear cut and the sun's beating down and it's like, it's too hot, there's nothing out here. The moment that you try to leave, next thing you know, you're driving, you see this buck standing on the side of the clear cut, just making its way to its bed or whatever. You have no idea when these deer are bedded down. there's so many of them. You don't know if this one is on the same time path as that one.
Well, and even if they are bedded, you know, they're still there. Well, the older you get when you're in your bed, so an old buck, he might want to get up and stretch every once in a while, yeah, or scratch his back with his antler, or you don't know what they're like. I watch deer behavior a lot in my neighborhood. And so, like, the other day we had like 7 does with their babies laying out on this hillside, and they were all laying in the shade. They're kind of ear flicking and licking themselves and just kind of just chilling.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm going to leave. And of course, one of them is a little spooky, so it pops up. And, you know, it doesn't take much, especially with young deer, to spook them.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you got fawns and stuff, because they're on predator alert all the time, even like just a branch breaks or a squirrel falls out of a tree or something yeah, can get their attention where they're like on alert. And then all of a sudden you're going to see them because they're going to move.
Yeah, that's because I've been in the situation a few times where I'm doing my typical, like, say it's just me and John, and we're walking out of this zone and we're talking, we're like, we don't really care anymore. You know, we're just talking, we're having a conversation, we're not caring about how loud we are. Next thing you know, you look up and there's a deer standing there looking at you. It happens like that every time.
Oh, yeah. Usually when you let your guard down or you're being a little noisier, I think then it pops them up or whatever.
But yeah,
that tends to happen. I would say, too, like, you know, a lot of people grew up just driving the roads. You know, they're driving some of these old logging roads or in these private timber places or whatever. And they're driving the roads and looking for animals. And a lot of us, kind of, that was just something you did. That was part of, while you're getting to your spot, you're always looking for animals. I talked with an Oregon State Trooper because we've gotten mixed information on this. And because the book will say you can't shoot from a roadway or you can't shoot from a vehicle. And those are accurate statements. And so I asked him, but I go, I've heard different things from different officers that say, as long as you get out of your vehicle, as long as it's not a main road, you can still shoot from the road. And then we've all heard the like 50 feet from the road ruling. And he said, both feet off of the roadway, you're legal for shooting. So the 50 feet thing, I guess, came up with antelope or something, and everybody confuses it with everything else. So, and I don't know why that's the way with antelope, but anyway, well, that's just a point of clarification, I guess.
And another thing I'll say too, if you're hunting these timber company land, or and some of that national forest ground too, the BLM land, like most of the time, not saying all the time, but most of the time, road systems connect. There's always more than one way in and one way out for, you know, their logging purposes. Easiest to not have a truck have to back up, turn around, and go head on with another truck, just in and out, straight through. So you also have to be aware of other hunters a lot over here, because there's roads sometimes above another road. There's roads that connect, somebody coming in the other way. So especially in that weird instance of just know your surroundings, where those other roads are, where other gates could be that could lead to this exact zone, just in case that other hunter's downrange of you and there's a deer that pops up in between you and him. Or you, yeah, and her.
And even if you're in the high country too, you got to be careful because you could shoot over a roadway and not know it.
Yeah.
You know, I just heard of an incident of that where a guy had shot a bull elk and it was like ridgetop to ridgetop. And then he went to go get it and there was a road kind of down below him that he didn't know was there. And he ran into a trooper that informed him he shot over a roadway and he had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, that's where, again, where I think Onyx and some of these e-scouting tools can really prepare you to know what that road system looks like. Because once you're out there, you're focused on the hunt and you're not always thinking about what you're doing, you know?
And just, you know, and a lot of this stuff will just come over time too. Like some of it seems like a lot, you know, especially having to worry about other people at all times. But as long as you know your zone, where you're at and what's feeding it, where people could be coming from, you're gonna be okay. Like don't take other people's safety for granted in that matter, and just think about the moment, because there could be somebody right below that deer that never sees it, because all it takes, what made that deer stood up could have been a hunter 100 200 yards past it or 50 yards past it that you can't see either.
What's your take on Hunter's Orange as far as that goes? Do you think that's a good idea in Western Oregon?
I think so. Yeah, I think definitely should wear Hunter's Orange. A lot of people don't, and I think that can get you into some trouble.
It sure makes a difference for knowing, like even our own party, when we have a pretty big group, you can see these little blaze orange dots all around you. It's like, okay, there's one of my guys there and one over there, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, especially, and if you're hunting with a group too, some sort of form of communication is always nice. If you're in a zone that doesn't have cell service, a lot of places don't, have something, you know, walkie talkies or something, so you can talk to your person, make sure that they're okay. And yeah, just safety is a big thing out there. Cause especially when you don't have cell service, it's up to you guys, you know?
Yeah. And I think when you're first getting started, if you haven't spent a lot of time in the woods, go slow. And walk roadways that you can walk in and walk out of, and don't get off the beaten path too far until you really know an area.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you have Onyx, you're probably okay. But if you didn't download your maps ahead of time, or your battery goes dead, and you don't have any way of charging that, then where are you going to be if you followed it in, you can't follow it out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and another thing about the phone too, if you do the, buy everything on the ODFW app, make sure your phone's charged, because if that dies, that's your way of tagging your animal.
Yeah, true.
And make sure you have that pen and paper so you can write all your information down after you do harvest an animal, in order to tag that animal the proper way.
And I would say just get out there and do it. You know, it's not as scary as I think people think it is to get started and get going. I mean, it is a lot of stuff, but you get out there and you start doing it. And we've always got a little 22 or 17 with us, because you're going to bump into some grouse, or even when you're archery hunting, you can get a grouse with your bow. Bring some meat home, and in Oregon you can harvest three of each species. I think it's three blues or three ruffed grouse, or I don't know if it's a combined bag. I always have to check every year before we start hunting, but it's that's good meat. You can't beat that meat. Then at least you're getting something that is going to be nice on the dinner table. You know?
Well, take advantage of it. It's a great freedom we have in this state, being able to do this. And we have a lot of opportunities to do this as long as you play by the rules and do it the proper way.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any other kind of burning tips for that brand new hunter? Or do you think we covered everything?
I'd say, yeah, just the, you know, back to the kind of the gear setup and stuff. When you're buying rain gear and you're buying all this fancy stuff, make sure, and it's hard to know, and it's a lot of trial and error stuff, but I've learned the hard way, a lot of the rain gear that I've bought that is from a camo brand, let's say, doesn't hold up to a lot of these blackberry bushes that we have around here, all these vining maples, all that stuff. You find these holes, and next year you pay for it when it's pouring down rain and you're walking, and next thing you know, feel like you're drowning because you have about 6 inches of water. It feels like you're wearing waders and you went underneath your wader line.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. And having those base layers, you know, like layering up your clothing, having a pack that you can take in water. I mean, we've been bad about that at various times through the years, where it's like, oh, I left my water in the pickup. Is that this was just going to be a short hunt and I'm in my Romeos and I'm not really thinking about, you know, harvesting an animal. And then you go on this quick little hunt that turns into a longer hunt, and one thing, and then the rain starts pouring down, and you know.
Yeah. And another thing, we're trying to give people tips so they avoid all the mistakes that we currently make still.
Yeah.
I wear Romeos all of the time hunting, and I always bring my boots with me, like, oh, I'll put them on if I see some deer. No, it never happens. Just wear your boots. I don't know why I make it so hard to just lace boots up.
Yeah,
every time I do that, I don't know how many animals I've been able to harvest, and I'd bet 70% of them I walk down to it with Romeos on.
Yeah.
To make my shot, and then have to do all the work and drag it up to the road.
And I mean, Romeo's a good shoe, nothing wrong with it, but it's not necessarily built for up and down elevations and hills. Yeah. And you know, moisture avoidance.
Yeah, on wet, slippery logs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. It's not, it doesn't benefit you at all. It's just going to get you hurt.
Yeah.
And wet. There's only two options there.
Yeah, and I mean, I oftentimes, like a couple of bow seasons ago, I had my nice pack with me, had it all loaded up, left it in camp the entire time and ended up getting stolen in camp, which was a bummer. But it was also like, if you have the gear, bring it and use it. Yeah. I mean, even if you're just kind of practicing with it and getting used to for a hunt where you're, maybe you're not going to need it on this hunt, but maybe you're doing a backpacking hunt down the road. Yeah. I'm gearing up for that right now and trying to figure out what gear do you got to have and what do you not got to have, you know,
right.
Because you want to keep your pack as light as you can, but you also want to have everything you need. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just, the gear here is just a difficult one. Like I said, it's trial and error. It's just whatever makes you comfortable. It's going to keep you dry and warm because you get wet and cold really fast.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing about Western Oregon.
Yeah, no doubt. And the guys that get the big bucks, though, they suffer through that.
Yeah.
You know, there's some suffering. Nobody kills a big buck without putting a little time getting cold and wet.
Well, any buck. And that's another thing, too, I would say about over here. Be grateful for the opportunity you get because you may never get another one. It's not especially if you're first time getting into this and you're a new hunter, be grateful for that opportunity. If you shoot I've harvested a few fork and horns, or no, I haven't, but I've seen it. Sorry. I've only shoot 3 points or bigger.
Yeah. He kills just big bucks.
All luck. I want to make that very clear. But just for that moment, like you may never see another one. So just be grateful for the opportunity given and take it.
And we also don't know when things are going to change. You know, I mean, they've changed. When I was growing up and you bought a general Western Oregon deer tag, it was a buck tag for the majority of the season. And then like the last week or the last 2 weeks, they called it a slaughter hunt because you could kill buck or doe, you know, and we don't do that anymore. And it used to be forked horn or better. Now it's any visible antler in Western Oregon. So everything's always changing and some things are more favorable for hunters and some things are less favorable.
Yeah.
The way the seasons have fallen the last few years have been real favorable for hunters because you're hunting a black-tailed buck in the rut at the end of these seasons. And that's a whole different game.
Yep. Yeah. Just if you're new starting out, try not to be discouraged. It's hard hunting. It's fun though. As long as you have the right mindset going into it. Don't think of it as you're gonna see 100 deer a day. It just isn't. It's not gonna happen. 5 is a good number. If you see 5, 3 is a good number. Just get that in your head. As long as you're seeing deer, you're seeing deer. Just remember, that's a big one to remember. And just get the gear, man. Spend the money on the gear. Don't cheap out on it. I did that way too many years, and it screwed me over in the long run.
I've always done that too, and I don't know why.
Well, how much gear do you think you've bought over your lifespan and going the cheap route?
Right. You go the cheap route and it lasts for a couple seasons and you move on to the net and then you rebuy it and you just keep doing that. And if you buy nice stuff, it lasts you year after year after year.
Yeah.
So it's,
you might have to rebuy once or twice.
Yeah.
Maybe max. But I was buying new rain gear. I was always buying the cheapest stuff for some reason. Like, oh, this would be good enough. Never is good enough.
No.
It never is. There's a reason why it's the good stuff is as expensive as it is because it's good stuff.
Well, and we grew up hunting in Eastern Oregon, and so you weren't ever really worried about rain gear. We'd have garbage bags. So on the off chance that rain would hit, we were punching holes in garbage bags and that was our rain gear, you know?
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, it's not a good method.
Especially, don't buy black garbage bags either if you're going to do that and then just look like a black bear running around.
Yeah.
Remember, we got other hunters out there.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Well, the key thing is it's the most important thing is just being safe, right? It's never worth hurting somebody else or getting hurt yourself because you're either in a rush or you're trying to harvest the animal in a way that's not safe. And so safety first. And yeah, we all enjoy hunting and you want to be successful, but you want to come home and you don't want to have surgery or, you know, get something taken out of your body or whatever. Yeah.
Have a knee brace for 12 weeks.
Yeah.
But I would also say to that, if you do see an animal and it's a, say it's a deer you're, or an animal that you're going to harvest, make sure it's in a spot that you can get to and get that animal out safely. That's another thing. Like, don't just get so caught up in the moment you see an animal and just shoot it. And then after you pull the trigger, go, oh, now what?
Yeah.
Because there's some spots in Western Oregon that you have that. Sam's being unprofessional with the phone. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I didn't silence my phone. I apologize. Sorry. But anyway, that was fun. It's good chatting with you.
It was good.
Blacktail 101. You're a much better blacktail hunter than I am. I know that. So
I don't know. I just lucky, I think.
Yeah, and the time. You've put a lot more time into it, you know, than I have. I've kind of gotten the benefit of being able to go with you and your dad and just didn't really focus on it when I was younger, you know? And so, like, I remember the first year I went with your dad and came home with a buck, and I told my brother.
Is that a train horn?
It's the only thing I'll hear. Like, I switch my ringtone all the time because I ignore it. Here. But anyway, sorry about that. But I remember the first time I went with your dad and your uncle, my cousins, and we're out there hunting one of your guys' good spots that you guys have hunted a lot. And your dad kept telling me it doesn't start getting good till 2 o'clock, you know? And so we're working all these different roads and stuff, and you're trying to get your eyes right. And then all of a sudden the deer start showing up, you know? And we came home with a buck that night, and I called my brother and sent him a picture. He's like, "Hey, we got one tonight." You know, I texted him, I think, and I was like, "Hey, I got one tonight," you know? And he's like, "Nuh-uh." And then I sent him a picture of this deer hanging, you know? So it was like just being patient, though, and like learning from people that are willing to show you stuff. But if you don't have those people, educating yourself online, there's so many resources, and then just putting the time in there, and you're going to learn your own stuff.
Well, and I would say too, my dad kind of learned all this stuff on his own, I would say, because like you were saying, our family they have never really been huge on the blacktail side of things. So, you know, he did a lot of hunting growing up, and he did most of the blacktail stuff, I would say, majority on his own. And it just, like you're saying, 2 o'clock is when that zone gets good, and it's true. It's 100% true. Don't know why. It is, though. And just that knowledge that he's gained through those years of doing it is how he's able to say, okay, this zone, we don't usually start seeing deer till this time. And then, or this zone, that's the morning spot. So we'll get this loop going to where we're hitting this zone first, and then we're hitting that other zone at 2, perfect timing, and then we're seeing deer. But it just takes the time and effort in those first, I bet, 15 years of my dad's trying all this stuff didn't go like that. I guarantee you it was a struggle and he would get lucky. Mm-hmm. But now he has a pretty good idea of how the deer where we hunt operate when they want to move.
Yeah, and so their behaviors don't generally change. The environment changes, though. So like that zone has had some fire. It's really brushy. Some other spots that used to be really good hunting are now so thick that it'd be really hard to see one, you know? So it's adapting to the environment changing too. So,
it's fun though. I as much as I love mule deer hunting, blacktail holds a special place in my heart. Yeah. Always. I love it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing some things. Hopefully this will be helpful for somebody getting started, and you can always reach out to us. We're not going to tell you spots, but we'll give you tips on what you can do to get started.
It depends on how much you pay. I'll show you some spots.
For the right price, it sounds like Dylan's for sale.
Yeah, just so, joking.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
See ya.